we're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Fellas, I've podcasted in some interesting places right now. God knows what, Motel 6 in rural Kansas. Some weird places this year. But I'm going to go with some random suite on the 50-yard line of TCU Stadium being probably the weirdest place.
That sounds...
Dude, this place
yeah,
is
that
nice.
Doesn't sound random. It sounds bougie.
Richard, podcasting is a visual medium. All I see behind you is a wall. Can you turn your laptop around so Godfrey
sure.
and I can see?
You see the purple roof?
That's
you
purple
see right
ceiling
here?
For those of you who are... Yep. Well, you really are. Yeah, you're in a luxury suite.
We'll tweet this. We'll tweet this from the account so I can give people a first-person account of where we're at right now. Podcasting is a visual medium, of course.
So you, Richard, were in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex on Saturday to cover the Big 12 championship, and now you're at TCU for their... pizza party.
Indeed, the pizza party reference for the uninitiated. When Clemson makes the playoff, Dabo throws a pizza party for everybody. It's a nice little fun tradition that they started and have kept going throughout their playoff heights. Obviously, they're not in the playoff this year. Yes, TCU had a watch party this morning. Originally, they weren't gonna do it if they lost the game yesterday, which is what I was told. And then after the game, they decided to open it anyway. And so the boosters, donors, whole team, coaches, families, all that kind of stuff were here today, and some assembled media. And yes, I was here for the moment when they announced that they were the third ranked team in the college football playoff. They will play Michigan in the day semifinal, the 4 o'clock Eastern semifinal in the Fiesta Bowl. Georgia will play Ohio State in the Peach Bowl at roughly 8 p.m. or whenever the hell, the night semifinal.
I'm looking forward to that, and we are going to talk about bowl matchups and playoff matchups and all the rest. We're going to do this as kind of a reaction show, but first, we'd be remiss not to spend 5 or 10 minutes on the weekend that was, that got us here. The game of the weekend, I think, according to most of us, would be the Big 12 game that Richard was at. This was our BetUS Pick'em game of the week. This was a game that we put a lot of thought into, and kind of my company line going in as we were doing the BetUS Pick'em was... All right, like we think TCU might kind of get got here, but they should still make the playoff. And thankfully, reason was seen. But Richard, you, after a season of, you know, kind of doubting TCU a little bit from time to time, you know, kind of treating them as a how long can they keep getting away with the team, actually flipped along with Godfrey, and you picked them to win this game.
I was talking to some TCU beat writers on the way in, and I was just like, yeah, I finally picked them this week, which means they're actually going to lose. And they did. They ended up losing it over
time. I blame Iowa State. I feel like we just got overconfident because they didn't like pull some crazy nonsense out of their rears, you know, in the last 2 minutes against Iowa State. So it's the Cyclones' fault.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, the game was incredible. The atmosphere was really cool. Kansas State fans traveled really well, and really showed out in this game.
Hey, was it as loud as it seemed?
Yeah, dude, it was loud.
It did not have that shopping mall, that sort of airy shopping mall feeling that Cowboy Stadium usually has. It seemed like it was actually like loud, and people were engaged.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. The people were in this from stem to stern in this game. That was a fun atmosphere as far as conference championship games go.
Oh, that's awesome.
No big deal or anything, but both I and the Twitter voting public got this one correct. While the team,
what's your overall record,
even
Alex?
Even a fucking broken clock, even
what's
a broken
that,
clock is right twice.
What's that season record, Alex?
How many conference championships did 2 of you win?
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Zero. It was a really good game. Richard, you said something that I thought was important to kind of hammer home on the podcast. Obviously, legendary performance by Max Duggan in a loss. The game-tying drive and two-pointer that he conducted were really things of beauty when he was clearly pretty gassed and or injured. And
yeah, you guys know that I don't really do like the like sports movie, like gritty trope kind of stuff a lot when I watch football. You guys understand how I watch football and how I digest it. The shit that he pulled yesterday, I'm serious. That was miraculous.
Your social head in the deck line in your promo when I saw this morning, I was like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah,
that's as sentimental as I've seen you.
Yeah, I don't. You can't see what Max Duggan did on that drive to bring this team back again to tie the game. I mean, I don't know if you guys could see it on TV, but like he throws the 2-point conversion, right, and like actually collapses on the field. Like his two linemen like had to like kind of like help him up. He's like bleeding from his arm. We joked with him this morning when we saw him. We were like, "How's your arm?" He's like, "It's fine. It's like a turf burn kind of thing." And he's just like, "It just will not like stop bleeding. It just scabbed up and it will not stop bleeding." He was absolutely gassed. I mean, he basically plunged in the end zone there to score there. But then obviously Dykes said it after the game. They were not comfortable QB sneaking him in overtime when they were inside the 2-yard line or whatever the hell. And they ran the fourth down play. They got some, they thought he got in on second down, which is where he was like an inch short. And then the third down play, Kendre Miller tried to like put it over the goal line and that got stopped. But there was some like consternation about whether it was actually reviewed and that got kind of weird. And then on fourth down, they run the play where they hand it off to Kendre and they get stuffed. And, a lot of people were like, "Oh, it's a bad play call," or whatever. I got really frustrated on Twitter because I think a lot of the times this happens sometimes on these close plays on fourth downs or whatever in end of game situations, people erase the defensive agency.
Yeah.
Like the defense is on the field. The defense is on scholarship too. The backup nose tackle, who was basically playing his first snap of the game right there, who stuffs TCU center, and TCU center isn't able to climb to the second level and get the block on the linebacker who ends up making the tackle in the hole, even though TCU had like tackle over and a fullback and we're going to plunge it in there probably if that linebacker gets blocked. Like, that's an incredible play by Kansas State to win that game and win the championship on that play in another great Big 12 title game.
And by the way, this is something that Kansas State has been good at all year. They are one of the best teams in the country in power rush defense in these third, fourth, and ones. Kansas State gets stops almost half the time on these plays.
Dykes said after the game, he's like, "Yeah, this has been a problem for us. It's been a problem for us in really short yardage situations." And I will tell you, we're not going to do it all in this podcast. We're going to do a scheme podcast, I imagine, as we get closer to the game. But Bubba, they better fix that.
Yeah, because unfortunate matchup. Better have that concern.
Yes, that had better get fixed before we get to New Year's Eve.
I would say that sneaking Duggan seems so obvious, or having him on a bootleg, or having it. It was obvious. I don't have an issue with the play didn't work. That's why everyone's pissed off at it. Having Duggan and putting Duggan in that situation, gassed or not gassed, that's what the defense expected. I didn't mind the play call at all. It just didn't work. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I thought the whole thing was fair play. I mean, like, I thought it was fair to go for it. I thought it was fair to hand the ball off, and it was a great defensive play. And if I, Alex, who has shit to talk about every decision anyone's ever made in football, am thinking, it was just fair play. Everyone played hard. It was like, I don't know. I just enjoyed the play. I didn't find fault in anything that Sonny Dykes or Garrett Riley did. And I do think it's worth giving credit to Kansas State. Kansas State, by the way, we'll get to bowl matchups in a second, but they could put Alabama's hand down a garbage disposal in a Sugar Bowl.
My beloved garbage disposal at it again. They absolutely, hey, just keep in mind historically what the, not even so much the overall record, what the performance on the field looks like when Alabama is in a bowl game with no national title implications under Nick Saban.
And it's not like, because people are going to say, Godfrey, people are going to be like, "Oh, well, they smoked Michigan in that Citrus Bowl." No, no, no. They smoked Michigan in that Citrus Bowl with Mac Jones, John Mechie, like Jameson, all those guys coming back for another ride. I am not entirely sure. This is not reporting. This is just a guess. I am not 100% sure Bryce Young, Will Anderson, and his friends, all of them, will be back for another ride in this game. But we'll get to that in a second.
Balls off in this game.
Before we get there, of course, I have to remind you guys about BetUS.com. That's BetUS.com. Join now, get 200% in bonuses with promo code SCD. Nobody in the industry gives better discounts than BetUS. Again, join up, use the promo code SCD. You get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BetUS.com and join today. That's BetUS, where the game begins.
The other, I think, most watched conference championship game of this week was USC face planting against the Utah Utes in the fourth quarter in Las Vegas. So it's interesting because the thing that we had been thinking might get USC wasn't really the thing that got them. Like, we were thinking what was going to happen if there was a night when the turnovers swung against them, and that didn't really happen. I mean, they didn't get the, like, you know, they didn't have a plus four margin in this game or anything like that. But I think
it was happening in the first half, though. Like,
I think they gave it away once more than Utah, and but in the end, you lose the game by, what was it, 23 points. You just got beat, and I think that Utah
did the Utah thing, just, man.
They did the Utah thing. They scored 47 points.
They did the same shit against Oregon last year. There are some, every podcast is somebody's first. So if you weren't with us last season, there's this thing that Bill Belichick says sometimes, and he's like, yeah, like sometimes you overanalyze the game, and a lot of times, like, I just tell my staff after we lose, fellas, we didn't tackle well or we didn't block well. The game is about blocking and tackling. USC could not fucking tackle these guys on Friday night. Like, it's just
okay.
It. On defense.
Keep your thought going, because I want to push back, because we're going to get to the Grinch thing, okay?
I wasn't even going to go all in on Grinch there. I was just going to say, look, Caleb Williams is on one leg, all right?
Yes.
Your offense is significantly different when Caleb Williams is on one leg.
And it really was significantly different.
Yes. You all saw what USC was in the first half on offense and then what they were on the second half. I'm sure Utah would have had some semblance of getting better as that game went on, but also Caleb Williams is on one leg, and that's like not like a small thing. But as far as the Grinch thing, which everybody wants to address, et cetera, because this is a trend with Alex Grinch defenses, you can teach tackling and physicality and toughness to an extent. Some of it is a mindset thing, but yeah, some of it is you can teach it, and obviously it's pretty clear that they should be teaching it better than they are. Some of this, and a lot of this, I think, is, look, I always say don't rank teams before the end of the season. Alex and I screamed all summer that USC get to a Pac-12 championship game, get in screaming distance of the Rose Bowl. That's the expectation. Right. You look back on this season, that is what they did. They hit that specific expectation by two dumb podcasters who they shouldn't really care about. But, you know, when you put it in the context of, oh, they were a whisker away from the playoff, then it feels like a disappointment.
Agreed. It's when you were right there and the fourth quarter goes that way. To turn it, though, on Utah, which I think would justifiably have felt a little bit chafed about all of the USC talk that we and others had in the offseason. What Utah did here was like pretty monumental. And if you think about where, like, how their season has gone, yeah, I mean, it was a fourth quarter onslaught, but to score 47 points, and they obviously also scored 40 plus when they beat USC back earlier in the season. To do that, like, with their offensive skill players, like, falling apart as the season's gone on, is like a hell of a job by Andy Ludwig, their OC, and by Kyle Whittingham, and by Cam Rising, and by every player on that offense who was still on the field. Like, Tavion Thomas didn't play in this game. Brent Keithy's been out for most of the season, and they just found offense, and it like helped a lot that USC couldn't tackle, but it was like an incredible performance. And it wasn't like last year completely where they just physically overwhelmed Oregon. Like, they found firepower where I wasn't sure how they could possibly keep finding firepower, and they just found it.
The Oregon thing last year was like a line of both lines of scrimmage story, and this was just a lot of offense at the end. Granted, USC just couldn't return serve. Has there been a program in our lifetimes that's changed its perception from small G5 to like high end P5 home record the way Utah has? Like, you know, Utah 10 years ago comes to the Pac-12 from the Mountain West. They look as big boy football as humanly possible. It's just, like, at this point. Destroying a Tiffany program 2 years in a row the way they have with back-to-back wins, it's really hard to beat a football team twice in the same season. It's really, really hard. Mm-hmm. They've done it 2 years in a row. They've done it 2 years in a row to a supposed playoff contender. They've done it 2 years in a row to a supposed top 10, top 15 coach. Eventually, we're going to have to just sit with the fact that, like, Utah is a narrative ruining beast, but it definitely deserves a lot of praise and attention.
Well, I also think Utah in 12-team playoff world,
round one,
like,
nightmare.
Exactly. Yep. And considering, remember, they'd host one. Well, they'd host one in this kind of reality.
Hosting a game I know we're in a hypothetical and we'll move on. Hosting a game on December 21st, which is roughly when these new games will start, in SLC, in that weather,
fucking freezing,
as loud as that, it's one of the loudest stadiums in America, would be a total nightmare. So, yeah, Kyle Whittingham, just stick around for 10 more years.
Elsewhere in FBS Conference Championship Weekend, UTSA, also on Friday night, put it on North Texas. UTSA, other than, this, I think, Georgia on the SEC, UTSA on CUSO was the widest gap between a team and the rest of their league.
Well, Troy, too.
Troy ended up
had the same record as South Alabama.
Troy ended up that way. Yeah, but I will say, Alex, like, I'll go back to what I said on the preview show about Troy. The defensive performance is it distinguishes you more, in my opinion, in a G5 league. And like I said, they were playing good G5 defense, and y'all wouldn't even let me get that sentence out before you said they play fundamentally good defense. That was on display again. McCall was in that game, by the way. It was terrible weather.
Not healthy.
Yeah, he probably shouldn't have been playing. It was terrible weather. Southeast Alabama in the rain. It was nasty, but like Troy beat their ass like they stole something.
Jamie Chadwell had other things on his mind as well. On Saturday, Toledo beats Ohio 17-7 to win the MAC. Hey, Toledo did what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
I think we've talked harder than this
we
year,
do have to acknowledge this, yes.
Yeah, and you know, they did what they were supposed to do and played well, particularly
I watched defense. More of the Buffalo-Akron game that was inconsequential on Friday than I watched of the Toledo-Ohio MAC championship.
You mentioned Troy pounding Coastal Carolina. Georgia pounded LSU. Does anyone have real profound insight on Georgia doing what it did?
Not on the Georgia side. I just think it's an absolutely fascinating LSU year, but we can talk about that later. The way they start, the way they end, and then how they were in the middle. It's fascinating. I mean, look, you need to learn. Yep. You need to learn the rules of the fucking football game. You need to learn what happens with a live ball and a field goal. You're a fucking genius who came from Notre Dame to replace the like erratic Ed Orgeron. You got to teach your players what to do, bro.
That is LSU special teams have been a journey this year. Michigan kind of boat raced Purdue, who kind of forgot about math there at the end there, kicking a field goal down like 12 points.
Second or third field goal, just for transparency, I did turn it off and just went about – I just started texting coaches.
So did I. I had this game on, and when I saw that they were kicking the field goal, one of these, I looked down at the score bug and thought that I was making a mistake. Like what was –
the Big Ten West jokes are so bad in that instance, I won't even make them. But it was like – I mean, it was like the AI was broken for Purdue. It was terrible.
And I'm not even – like, to be honest with you, like, I'm not even really belaboring that point because I don't think there's a real reality where Purdue actually wins.
No, but go balls out. Go for it.
Yeah.
Also on this day, Tulane 45, UCF 28.
Green Wave, man.
The Wave, a deserving New Year 6 participant, a solid stem to stern season for them. Really, really well done. And they get, Godfrey talked about, it's hard to beat a team twice. This was UCF's second trip to Yulman Stadium in a month's time or so. Turned out to be a lot harder the second time that they were there.
Alex, you know, as I see Tulane win a conference championship game, the thing that I think about and that makes me go back is like, man, you know, I wish there was a podcast about kind of the broad history of Tulane in this moment to kind of catch me up on the context of how cool it is to see them win a conference championship.
That was a better segue than yours. Thank you, by the way, to all of the new patrons who have joined us at splitzoneduo.com. We are now racing towards 5,000, at which point Godfrey's going to have to do an unedited blindside commentary track. One of the things that we did this summer, and I hope to do more projects like this in the future, stay tuned, is a series called Dead Letters about squandered potential, broken promises, etc. in college football, told in a narrative, kind of scripted-ish way. And Tulane's history was the first episode I wanted to do because the way that Tulane football was taken apart in the 1950s deliberately at the behest of people at Tulane is not – there's no such thing as a singular story really in college football history, but it's up there. And I'm happy for Tulane fans, especially the ones who have been around a long, long time and kind of tracked the long decline of this program, that they are playing in a big, big, big time bowl game this year. It's great for the Wave. Roll Wave. What haven't we talked about? Fresno State won on the blue at Boise, 28-16. Solid performance. And Richard, you're right. Their defense for Fresno, played well, you know, showed up in this game and did the job against a Boise team that had also just a weird, weird, weird season that's kind of hard to evaluate. And in the night capper, along with the Big Ten, Clemson looked more Clemson-like.
He gaslit us, guys. He gaslit us the entire season. We cannot let this stand. No, I'm joking.
Who's look, Dabo or DJ?
Dabo. Okay. Look, I understand. I understand why Cade Klubnik had not really played in he didn't even start this game. Remember, he didn't start this game. They yanked DJ again, which is like the third or fourth time it's happened this season. I was at the Notre Dame game when they yanked DJ, and like, look, man, Klubnik came in and was deer in the headlights, threw a pick six on like his first pass, all right? The week before that, or 2 weeks before that against Syracuse, they yanked DJ at home. Cade Klubnik came in and like only ran run plays. I'd seen Klubnik play against Georgia Tech's against Georgia Tech's twos and look really good in the season opener. They put him in against Furman earlier in the season, and it was a bad drive that he led with Clemson's ones against Furman in that September game. So, like, everybody wants to kill Dabo because he hadn't done this earlier in the season, especially when Klubnik comes in and looks. I mean, that pass he threw down to left side for holy shit.
Dude, what, like, he looked was better than Drake May, was what he looked. Like, yes, he was the best quarterback on the field. This guy is obviously 100% Clemson's quarterback for 2023. And sure, I would imagine that DJ would
and in be a few weeks elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, and in a few weeks, whenever it is that Clemson plays our bowl game.
I'm going to root hard for DJ at his next stop. I hope that he has, I shouldn't even say that because we don't know what athletes are planning. But wherever it is, I hope to see DJ succeeding in whatever uniform he's wearing next year. Not the end that he probably wanted for his season, but it was for Cade Klubnik. That was conference championship weekend.
Wow, you guys skipped over New Mexico State 65, Valparaiso 3. Unfucking believable.
We did do that.
You know, they didn't even need the game. They didn't even need the game for the bowl.
They just wanted to play a 12th. But New Mexico State going to a bowl game is cool because if you'll remember, they had not bowled in like a preposterously long time until they went a couple years ago. And I remember even then it was like they could only go to, I think it was the Arizona Bowl because they – it was just a travel expense thing. This is going to be their second bowl since they went to a pair of Sun Bowls in 59 and 60. So happy for the Aggies fan base that they're going to get to have a postseason game.
Buffalo also bowls when they beat Akron 23-22.
And I think that of 5 and 7s, I think Rice claimed a bowl spot. Rice is apparently bowling.
Yeah, McMurphy. It was on McMurphy's feed today.
Brett McMurphy's the guy to get to on this, by the way, and he has them.
I just want
to
use his full name so he didn't come after me too.
Brett McMurphy, Action Network credited.
It's 3:30 Eastern time, so all the bowls are not even out yet right now. I don't even know what all of them look like. Quickly before we kind of very quickly sort of take an eye at the playoff, the fun ones, obviously Rose Bowl, got to say it off the top, Utah, Penn State, Cotton Bowl is going to be incredible, I think. Tulane and USC, I think that betting line is going to be a little closer than you may think. To round out the New Year's Six, Sugar Bowl, like we said, Kansas State may be the garbage disposal Alabama Six stand-in, and then an extremely orange Bowl, Clemson plays Tennessee.
Wow. I didn't even realize that.
Cade Klubnik versus Joe Milton. How about that?
And OB the Orange will be on hand to MC the proceedings. Can't wait. There are actually – so just out before we talk about the playoff, some quick shouts that I want to give to reported bowl matchups or
announced bowl matchups. Yeah, I was going to ask if you were going to do this, but elsewhere. Do you want to run them down, or I have a couple I like.
Yeah, let's do this, and you can kind of vote them up or down. I think that there are going to be a few that I know are going to be very appealing to Godfrey and to me in some cases, and Richard will see. The Cheez-It Bowl, which is now the Citrus Bowl – that's LSU-Purdue, all right. A couple teams that probably, LSU's case, wishes they were playing something better. The Arizona Bowl, Ohio-Wyoming. That do anything for anyone?
Yeah.
Pitt and UCLA are going to the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. Pitt in the Sun Bowl is going to bring back some memories, I think, of Pitt playing in what I think most people would say was one of the more drab bowl games in the history of bowl games, which they lost 3-0 to Oregon State in 2008 under Dave Wanstead. So, you know, Pitt fans are going to be thrilled.
I can tell by how excited you sound.
I kind of am into the Alamo Bowl, Washington and Texas.
I think the Alamo Bowl always ends up with a good helmet game, and this is definitely a good helmet game, but I think this actually might be a good football game too. So I'm good here.
Camellia is Georgia Southern again. Okay. Buffalo.
Camellia. Holy shit. Camellia. What?
What did I say?
Camellia.
What did I say?
Camellia.
Oh, said everyone. Camellia. Everyone will hear that I said Camellia.
No, you said Camellia.
I think if you rewind this, you'll hear that I said Camellia. There's
he's
actually
doing
no
the
need
edit
to
today,
though.
So if
yeah, he's
if
doing
our,
the edit.
If
not
our
Vito.
Response seems incongruent, that's why.
I have so much integrity that I'm going to leave it in because sometimes you get things wrong. The Birmingham Bowl on the 27th, East Carolina, Coastal Carolina. Yeah. I think a lot of the air might be out of the Coastal Carolina balloon at the moment.
Gee, why do you think that? Utah State and Memphis in the First Responder Bowl. Quick Lane, New Mexico State and Bowling Green. Godfrey's Bowling Green Falcons go bowling.
They lost to EKU.
Yeah. Hey, they did, but they still. But here's the thing: they still found six wins even without
so
using that one.
We get this far down on the list. By the way, you're just looking for narrative. So, like, I mean,
of course.
I will point out in the Camellia Bowl, Georgia Southern's quarterback Kyle Ventrees transferred from Buffalo. So, I mean, yeah, you got that.
A couple of things. A, if you can't tell, there's no run a show for this show. Ding, ding, ding. B, something called Easy Post sponsors the Hawaii Bowl. San Diego State against Middle Tennessee.
I think it's got to be shipping, and there's a lot of money in shipping. Mm-hmm. That's how they're sponsoring the bowl. Independence Bowl, Houston and Louisiana. Okay. Here's one that I like a lot, and I will watch. And I think it might be like a weekday after. Now, I think the New Orleans Bowl is usually at night, but it's South Alabama and Western Kentucky at the Dome.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
That is a fun game. That's South Alabama plays really good defense, and Western Kentucky plays really good offense. And I'm about that. I think that will be fun. And
you about that action?
I'm absolutely about that action. I think it'll be fun. The Idaho Potato Bowl, San Jose State, and Eastern Michigan.
That's an ugly game, but a good ugly game. Those are two good teams. I like that game.
UConn to the Myrtle Beach Bowl against Marshall. Godfrey, yes.
Marshall, 12.5-point favorite. Way to go, Mora.
Frisco Bowl, Boise and North Texas. That's basically a home game for North Texas.
I think North Texas is going to pull a huge upset there.
Vegas Bowl is Florida and Oregon State. Oregon State, I think, it might be favorite.
RJ, how are we feeling about the Beavs? How are we feeling about the Beavs?
My girlfriend's parents are coming to New York City that weekend, so I can't go.
To Vegas?
I am.
To watch a nail biter against Jonathan Smith's
so
Beavs?
Mad. I want to go to fucking Vegas. Are you kidding me?
Have another shot.
Lending Tree Bowl. Southern Miss. Rice.
Sure.
Nice.
Couple teams that aren't often bowling these days. So good to see.
I shouldn't downplay the Southern Miss side of it. They've scratched like hell. The LA Bowl, Fresno State, Wazoo. That's good football. Legitimately good football.
The Kimmel Bowl, if you will.
I just said LA Bowl. And you will like, not. No one's making us use the sponsors, Alex.
New Mexico Bowl. New Mexico Bowl. BYU. SMU. Learn your history, kids. Yeah. Get on the old YouTube and Google 1980 Holiday Bowl. You'll understand the significance of this bowl matchup.
Best bowl matchup so far.
I think this is. I think this is the best one. Other than the New Year's Six, this is actually ranked versus ranked now. Troy and UTSA in the most committee style imaginable.
On a Friday, December 16th. This game is coming soon, and it's maybe a top three bowl game all season.
Is that game in the afternoon?
One of them is. ESPN, the next bowl we haven't, I'll just go ahead and say it, the Bahamas Bowl is UAB in Miami.
Oh, my God.
Like,
yo, that's a 3 o'clock in the afternoon
game.
I might have to have a little, like, gathering at some bar in D.C. or something to watch that game on, like, a Friday afternoon.
Troy and Roadrunner fans in the
generalists to enjoy. I think that'll be fun, and I think it is also, good that they're both ranked now. But it is the most committee thing ever that both of these teams get ranked 24 and 25 on Selection Sunday after being utterly ignored throughout the season. They lost a combined four games.
Remember, the committee re-ranks every week, and they go from 0 to 60 every week. Reminder. If we miss any bowls, do not tweet at us. We do not care. It's 3:30 in the afternoon.
UAB in Miami, Ohio. That's the last of them.
I threw it in there.
It's the Bahamas Bowl.
Did we do the Liberty? Has this saga ended?
I don't know.
Since
we've
recorded,
McMurphy doesn't have that one yet.
They do. We skipped the line. Actually, McMurphy has two that we didn't announce. the Texas Bowl, my alma mater, Ole Miss against Texas Tech, who these two teams have played each other in bowls so many times. Arkansas and Kansas in the Liberty Bowl, thus ending the saga of the Border War not being played in Memphis. And I think Wake is playing Mizzou in some bowl. I don't know which one.
So what about the Charlotte Bowl, Duke's Mayo?
I don't think it's out yet.
Miller and crew.
It's not out yet. Again, it's 3:30 Eastern time in the afternoon. Not every single bowl has been announced yet.
I don't think we hit the Pinstripe Bowl. How could we forget it? I don't think that we have.
Yeah, they're trickling. They're trickling in. By the way, just announced as well. Did we do the Citrus Bowl, LSU and Purdue?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
But the other Cheez-It Bowl, Florida State, Oklahoma, I think is also announced.
Cool.
I don't think we mentioned the Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Journalistic integrity out of us today. Terrible.
That's the Phoenix one, by the way. The artist formerly known as the Cheez-It is now the Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Wait, playoff Richard, games.
Richard, before we do, any of those bowls tickle your fancy for your Nokian Tires road trip of the week?
None of those do, but the one that does is the one I am crossing fingers. Hopefully my editors aren't listening to this. Going to the Fiesta Bowl.
Going for golf reasons. Quick plug.
You're goddamn right I am, by the way. I will be extending that trip on my own dime, of course. I will be extending that trip to hit the links.
I don't even golf, but when I woke up the morning of the Fiesta Bowl, they put you in a golf resort. I don't remember which one, don't ask. But like, I remember waking up and looking around and being like, oh, I get it. Like, I get it. This is why people come here for a month every January. It's amazing.
Yeah, I ran into Sonny Dykes' wife up here, and we were talking, and I was like, don't worry. Fiesta Bowl is going to treat you
right. I mean, the whole John Junker joke aside, alliteration, the Fiesta Bowl is known for having the best everything in the bowl experience. Like, it rivals the Rose in terms of the hospitality and the setups and all that stuff. Way better than the other ones.
So that is also going to be my Nokian road trip of the early bowl of the bowl season. NokianTires.com, Nokia with an I, Tires with an I, .com/SCD. You have heard us talk about Nokian a lot on the show this year. They've been great partners of ours. They have been great tire providers of ours. Reliability, crucial all times of year. I think that's really what you want with your tires is reliability. It's the most important thing. And guess what? It is even more important in December, in January, which we are now in. I'm looking forward to continuing my journey on my Nokian tires, though I think it's a little far for me to actually want to drive to Arizona. So I might fly there and then drive around once I'm there. But Nokians could ably get you all the way across the country. Been done many a time.
Real quick, about five minutes on each game. Instant reactions, instant preview, what have you. Michigan TCU, I think it'd be fascinating. How Michigan's pass defense especially defends TCU, Tate Barber, Quentin Johnston especially is actually going to be fascinating to me. Quentin Johnston hasn't really been healthy over the last few weeks. I think was healthy yesterday. You saw the big play ability that he has and the splash play that he is waiting to happen. But a note for Tate Barber. Tate Barber as a slot receiver against Mike Sanderstall, slot corner for Michigan, is going to be a really, really cool matchup. Michigan on offense, Donovan Edwards, it sucks that Blake Corum is not going to be in New York for the Heisman probably and not going to be in Phoenix on the field for this game. Donovan Edwards is a monster and a big play waiting to happen at running back for Michigan. And I also think Michigan's getting the best out of J.J. McCarthy right now. So that, I think, is going to be a fun one. I will say this. TCU's done the comeback thing. They live on that. It's a lot of fun. I would not get down to this Michigan team early because I think Michigan can avalanche you and boat race you out of that stadium.
I think it is possible that Michigan scores a whole hell of a lot of points in mm-hmm. this game.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if McCarthy keeps being the best version of himself. Like, TCU's most notable problem over the course of the year has been that they are leaky on the back end, and they are susceptible to very long passing plays. And Michigan, like, kind of increasingly, though they've done this with the run play, especially the last 2 weeks with Donovan Edwards, like three or four different times, Michigan has some guys who will punish you in that way. If you are not serious about putting a lid on your defense, I would worry about that if I were TCU in this game. I'm not sure. Richard, what do you think is the thing that you would worry most about if you were a Michigan Wolverine, you know, a month out from this game?
I really think you're worried about Quentin Johnston. I mean, you're worried a little bit about Max Duggan off schedule, but I think you're worried about, because look, Marvin Harrison Jr. got his against Michigan. Like, it's not like if you're a good receiver, you can get yours against this team. Remember, Michigan from a pass rushing perspective, Mazi Smith's a great player, but like they're not built like they were last year as far as effectiveness in pass rush. They're not. I think it's built more solidly up the middle for Michigan as far as the spine of that defense is concerned. So pay attention. Obviously, Kendre Miller's a guy to pay attention to, but I don't know. I'm not so sure Kendre Miller's going to have a ton of joy. Again, these are instant reactions, instant analysis. We'll have a lot more, a lot in depth as we get closer.
My thoughts are Duke versus UCF in the Military Bowl just announced. I'm deferring to you two on the initial reactions. I will have questions. I have a lot of questions that I don't know how I feel about yet, more related to Georgia and Ohio State. But no, I will defer to you guys, at least for the next couple of weeks. Big losses late in the season. I know there have been bigger losses by teams who have made the playoffs. I don't know if there's been a bigger loss this late in the season for a team who has made the playoffs. I think even pointing that out is somewhat semantic, because one of the things, like, believe it or not, I do respect some of the things that the committee does. They are whole list or kind of whole body evaluation, like Richard just got done saying. They do the whole evaluation every single week. They re-rank every single week. I thought the way they contextualized Ohio State's loss was correct. I'm fine with them being there. All that being said, at first glance, this seems like it's going to be really ugly.
I will say this. Buddy, the 48 hours, the 12 or so hours of Alabama politics, and I know that Ohio, that Ryan Day was on College Game Day in the morning. But to see Nick Saban on games, politicking for that team, man, that is...
He's had a career-long...
You become Mac Brown faster than you realize.
He has a career-long habit of this, and I've been working on a Nick Saban project for Secret Base, so I've just been like reading a lot of his interviews over the years and stuff, and like he's very dour, he's very specific and like relentless, and he's very about the data. He always has been his entire career. He always wants to be consistent. The one time where that goes by the wayside, y'all, is any time Alabama has ever been on any kind of Mendoza line with the postseason, and he gets
absolutely
as schlocky and as patronizing and as like wheeler dealer circuit riding salesman as any football coach does. He was like kind of embarrassing himself, I thought, the last couple days, because they weren't getting in.
He does this thing where he flips the switch so quickly from stop saying nice things about our team, this is rat poison, I'm trying to keep these guys focused, to like, I just don't know what people expect from this group of young men, you know?
Opens that suitcase of encyclopedias and starts the like schlocky salesman shit. So Georgia, I would like to fashion a world in which we have really good playoff semis, but this just seems like it's going to be a...
I don't know, Bubba.
No, look, I think that there is a world in which, and I'm not going to say that we're going to get both of these because I know better than that, because like we get a playoff semifinal is actually fun and interesting, what, like one out of every six times historically. I think that you could talk me into both of these games being one-score games. You could talk me into it.
I think he's on to something. He's on to something.
Ohio State has Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, and that's that. I literally was going to say that. See, this is the thing is, people are going to roll their eyes, but last year Alabama showed, like, if
yes,
Stroud, right.
Take me to church.
Now look, Stroud is going to go about his business a little bit a different way with off-schedule plays than Bryce Young did in the SEC Championship game last year. But like, they have that explosive over-the-top passing game that can
And now, guess what? This is the thing where Ohio State wins out too, because they didn't have to play a game this weekend because they got their asses kicked. So neither of their best receivers tore their ACL. They're both going to be there on the field to play against a Georgia defense that is really good, but the last time they played a team that had two receivers quite like these two, like Egbuka and Harrison, and really Ohio State has more than just that, it was the SEC Championship game against Bama where things didn't go nearly as well as they did when Mechie was hurt and when Williams got hurt in the game.
I'm very curious to see if JSN finally joins us in the college football season. as well. I don't know. I don't know the status of that. The hamstring injury has been nagging. We will see if he is ready to rock in this
game. Like I said, I'm going to come at it with a schematic idiot's serious set of questions as we get closer. But first, my first glance is like, oh, I just need to just go ahead and sim to the Georgia-Michigan final. And I don't want that. Look, I don't want that.
I think Georgia is probably going to win the game. They're the best team in the country. I think that. But I'm just saying Ohio State having at least two and maybe three first round, even top 20 NFL pick type receivers makes that a different proposition than you might think if you just look at Ohio State's, you know, recent problems. Go ahead.
I'm in the bag for an up. Like I want to find the way to make this more interesting, just from a just to change it up, just a narrative difference, because that's what I'm here for. So like I want a hypno-toed national championship. It's just not gonna probably happen.
Speaking of narrative, Steven, here's the thing that's most delicious to me, and this is the last thing I have to say for this episode. In a couple of weeks' time, Ryan Day could be one of two things. One of them is. He could be without a national title at Alabama, or excuse me, without a national title at Ohio State.
Well, I doubt he'll win a national championship at Alabama.
What do you know that I don't have?
He could be without a national title in 4 years leading Ohio State, and he could be the guy who can't beat Michigan, and who has lost to Michigan
twice in a season,
or maybe even three times in about 13 months. And he could be run out of that entire state, never allowed to return, or he could have a 47-5 record in a national championship. I enjoy that this could go so diametrically opposite ways for Mr. Day. I enjoy that.
We will have much more playoff analysis, et cetera, as we get closer to the game. I have not eaten all day. I need Heim barbecue stat. So I'm out of here. All right.